Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
More on that story now that Brian mentioned in the bulletin. Israel blocking the entry of all humanitarian aid into Gaza in this dispute over the ongoing ceasefire deal. Phase one of that deal expired on Saturday. Hamas is insisting that the deal move on to phase two, which involves the withdrawal of Israeli troops in Gaza. But Israel wants to extend the first phase, demanding that half of the remaining hostages be released immediately. Let's get the latest now. I'm joined by special correspondent with PBS NewsHour, Leila Malana Allen. Leila, thank you for being with us this morning. When was phase two supposed to start if phase one expired on Saturday?
Morning, Claire. Phase two is supposed to start now. So the deadline to start negotiating phase two was February 3rd. The idea was that they would have the first couple of weeks. There will be some good faith built by this back and forth exchange going ahead of hostages for prisoners each week. The aid would start coming in and both sides would be in a mood to continue. That never happened. We have no evidence that there's ever actually been serious negotiation of phase two. There was a last-ditch attempt on Thursday and Friday. Steve Witkoff, who is Trump's Middle East envoy, went out and tried to get these talks back on track. Nothing happened, and the Israeli delegation left Cairo after less than 24 hours. Mm-hmm. Nothing's gone ahead, and since then we've had this statement come out that essentially what's happening is Hamas wants to move forward to stage two, as has always been agreed. Israel wants to stick to stage one. But what Israel wants to do is it wants to essentially get the benefits of stage two while sticking in stage one. Now, why that's important is what was due to happen in stage two was the negotiation of the actual end of this war. So the complete pullout of IDF troops, moving forward to all Gazans being able to return to their homes, all the remaining 60 hostages being released, just over half of whom are dead. So half of whom will be bodies, but there are at least 24 living men we know about still hostage inside Gaza, and the release of hundreds more Palestinian prisoners. Now, what Israel wants is to continue the same terms as phase one, but release half of those hostages, presumably the living hostages, immediately on the first day. There is no way Hamas is going to agree to that, because, of course, once their leverage in these negotiations is gone, which is the hostages, there's absolutely no reason for Israel to not go back to continuing the war in Gaza. So their only kind of negotiating tactic to move into a situation where the IDF actually does pull its forces out completely, because, of course, we still have seen war actions by Israel in Gaza during this ceasefire period, although many fewer, four people were killed just yesterday by Israel in Gaza. There's really no reason why Hamas would agree to this. And of course, and I can speak more about this, there are political motivations as to why Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, may not actually want phase two to go ahead at all and is making demands he knows will not be met.
Well, tell us more about those political reasons then.
So Netanyahu is really stuck right now between a rock and a hard place. Essentially, what started happening during the beginning of the ceasefire deal was, at the start, it was female hostages being released. Physically, at least, they looked in fairly good condition. Then the male hostages started being released, and the first few male hostages to be released were incredibly emaciated, had evidently been treated terribly badly, if not tortured. They were saying there were other male hostages who were being kept underground, away from sunlight, being starved, shackled to the ground in tunnels. Hamas also released a video of two hostages watching other hostages being released, two hostages who aren't involved in this particular phase of the deal. And so people inside Israel started to panic. They took to the streets in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem protesting, saying, "We need our hostages back right now." Hamas on the other side started saying rightly that Israel wasn't providing or allowing through all the aid that it was supposed to during this deal. So already there were clashes. And so you've got all the people in Israel saying to Netanyahu, look, our number one priority is to get our hostages out. We need our hostages home now. On the other side, you have Netanyahu's right-wing coalition, which, of course, 3 years ago was the only way he was able to make a government, by allying with those far-right politicians to make his cabinet, saying, look, we will leave government if you don't go back to war. We want a complete resumption of the war on Gaza. Already, one of his most prominent right-wing ministers, Itamar Ben-Gvir, the national security minister, resigned the day of the agreement of the ceasefire. Now Bezalel Smotrich, who's the finance minister, who's another leading right-wing figure, is saying that he will resign. So Netanyahu faces a choice between public disgruntlement because they don't want, many people in Israel don't want the war to continue. They want any deal to be made so they can get the hostages back. And the reality that his government may quickly fall apart and he may fall from power if he doesn't agree to go back to war.
So Leila, this decision then to stop allowing aid into Gaza, it's been condemned by the Egyptians, it's been condemned by the Qataris, who we know helped negotiate this ceasefire deal. What is the logic behind it for Benjamin Netanyahu? Is he buying time here, given what you've just explained to us?
He is partly buying time. He's also trying to apply pressure. You know, he knows now that he's in a position where he's got an American leadership team that doesn't really care about aid, right? Trump's administration has just pulled US aid funding from essentially the entire world. So Netanyahu is in a very strong position because the Israeli government is breaking international law by doing this. There is no if and but about it. Under the Geneva Conventions, Israel is an occupying power, and it is their obligation to provide the necessary aid for the people living in that occupied territory for their humanitarian need. Already under the ceasefire, the amount of aid trucks that were supposed to be allowed in, the amount of tents and prefabricated buildings people to live in Gaza, because of course 80 to 90% of housing units are destroyed in Gaza. Many of those have not gone through, the fuel hasn't gone through. So they are breaching international law. But Netanyahu knows that that doesn't really matter. He's been hosted at the White House by Trump as somebody who has an International Criminal Court conviction out against him. There's an International Court of Justice, ruling out against Israel, saying that they have been breaking international law. We live in a new world where none of these things seem to matter to the people who are negotiating. So it's certainly a bargaining tactic. And it's also just punishment. Israel's foreign minister came out yesterday, Gideon Sarah, and he said, yeah, well, absolutely. The second Hamas said that they don't agree to our terms, we froze aid. His exact words were, we weren't going to do it for free. Mm-hmm. So, of course, all NGOs, the Egyptian government, have come out and said this is criminal. This is the politicization of aid, using it as a blackmail tool.
Now, in the immediate term, I mean, we know that the aid agencies have been stockpiling whatever they've been able to get in over the last number of weeks. So is there a grace period here where this decision won't have a direct impact? What are the agencies saying?
There is a grace period of maybe a few days. As I said, firstly, you know, it's not like the flow was as free or as large during the 6 weeks of the ceasefire as it was supposed to be. Just to give you a sense of what we're looking at here, before the war began on the 8th of October 2023, 90% of people in Gaza were already dependent on some form of humanitarian aid, right? There is nothing in Gaza, everything, water, medicine, fuel, every sort of food, all the agricultural land has been destroyed. Everything has to be brought in. So the second it's not being brought in, people have access, 2 million people have access to absolutely nothing. Now, Israel's argument is that there was kind of a replenishing of stocks during the ceasefire. That's completely not the case when you speak to humanitarian actors on the ground. They just managed to start helping the severe suffering of people based on the starvation and health conditions they were facing from how much they have not had for the last year. They've done nothing about being able to build new stockpiles for the times to come out. It is freezing conditions in Gaza. 6 babies have already died from freezing to death. They don't have the tents they need. As I say, they don't have access to medicine. Children across the strip with horrific skin conditions because they don't have access to clean water. You know, people in the streets of Gaza yesterday were already saying, on the ground, saying the prices of things have already tripled since the news came out about this. Conditions are absolutely dire. People are struggling to make it through the day. They really, you know, most people live on one meal a day. They don't have access to anything they need. So there's no way in which this period of aid coming in has really given any more than about a week. Things are going to start to get even worse very fast.
Leila, thank you very much for being with us this morning. Leila Malana Allen there, who is special correspondent with PBS NewsHour. Coming up next on the programme, the Palestinians, Cubans and British people who are learning Irish.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.